Fans, we are live on Blog Talk Radio for Falcon Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York, and no, this is not Drunk Shaq, it is Impact Media. Appreciate you guys joining us on this amazing Thursday. It's been a pretty good week, I'd say, you know. Knock on wood, there's been no big injuries, been no crazy things happening. Been a lot of fun stuff going on, really. Coach and Reggie could join us later on, but currently, here in just a few short minutes, we'll have our guest. We'll have our guest, Cody Elias, on. You know, we've had him on before. We'll talk some Raiders, some 49ers. Obviously, we'll talk Raiders because that's where the Falcons are going this week. They're going out to the Bay Area. Where, in all likelihood, I really think they're going to get crushed. And we'll get those picks. We'll get those picks from everybody here shortly. Maybe before we get off here, who knows? But like I said, happy Thursday. Hope everybody is doing well. And we're going to get started with some stuff here in a few short seconds. Just as soon as we get back from commercial right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And we're back here on Falcon Zone. Once again, I'm Jeremy V. Impact York. Appreciate you joining us. We've had some fun things here on Impact Media. Obviously, just a couple days ago, we dropped our first, the reboot of our hockey show, Board Check, where we talked about the preseason for the Atlanta Gladiators and, of course, their pro affiliate, the Boston Bruins. Coming up just next week, we're going to drop episode 2 of the preseason where we talk about the Manchester Monarchs and the LA Kings, which I guess who is on the line may know a little bit about because the Kings have seemed to dominate his two teams here lately. He is the producer from 95.7 The Game Morning Show, Chad, Joe, and Lowe. He is Cody Elias. How you doing, Cody?
Oh, well, Jeremy, how are you, man? Thanks for having me back on.
Hey, it is always good to have you back on, and Definitely, since the hometown Falcons are going to be headed your direction rather for the I'm going to call it the Oakland Raider exhibition. Do you see this thing playing out any differently than that?
I mean, I think it'll be the way the Raiders played on last Sunday in New Orleans. I see it being a close game. The Raiders defense couldn't stop anything Drew Brees was doing. They Sean Smith just looked bad against Brandon Cook. Really quick, so I could see this being a high-scoring game. There's a lot of optimism and hope here in Oakland that this is the Raiders' year where they finally make it back to the playoffs. They looked very good on Sunday. Derek Carr with the Superman flip, although he was told by Jack Del Rio and several of his teammates to don't ever do that again. And just Jack Del Rio's decision to go for 2, that was a huge thing. We've been talking about that all week. The quote-unquote cojones on Pilsorio to do that in such a big spot in week 1. It was an interesting call, but it worked out in the favor for the Raiders. So I see this being a close game, and I see the Falcons, you know, it's going to be a close game, so we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, I do agree that the Falcons' best shot at this is to get in the shootout like the Saints did. You know, that leads me to the next part I was going to bring up, and I'm going to try to attack this a slightly different way because you guys have done a good job over there at 95.7 The Game of as many variations of this, but especially you being the WWE fan like myself, who has the bigger grapefruits, Jack Del Rio or Vince McMahon?
Oh, that's tough. You know, Vince McMahon, you know, his are pretty extensive, but you know what? I think Del Rio doing that, going for 2 in the first game of the season, in a spot that the Raiders were in, I think I have to go Jaffa right now. But if it was any other circumstance, a preseason, you never go against Vince McMahon. But right now, it has to be Jack Del Rio.
Yeah, especially since Vince took a little bit of a backseat here lately, just taking it a little easier than normal, you know, letting the kids run it. But, yeah, I mean, especially to hear that Jack made that call, you know, a minute or two before it actually happened. It wasn't a split-second decision. From what I heard, Jack Del Rio told the offense, if when we score, we're going for two. And that's what we always hear, but none of these coaches actually do it. There's probably only two or three other coaches in the league that would actually make that call, and I couldn't name them off the top of my head. But when I heard that happen, I immediately flipped over to make sure I could see that, and it was beautiful. You couldn't have drew it up any better. It was the fade to Crabtree. It was just the best matchup, I think.
Yeah, no, it was, and as not only Raider fans, but Bay Area football fans, including 49er fans like myself, remember that was the same play that the Jim Harbaugh and the 49ers go up against in the Super Bowl against the Ravens that did not work, the fade to Crabtree in the end zone that, you know, ultimately didn't work out and the Niners lost the Super Bowl. But that time it worked out because Michael Crabtree, he ran that route perfectly. Derek placed up a ball over him. He only Crabtree should go up to get it. And also, Crabtree's hands are incredible. He everyone always says he might have the best hands in football. I don't disagree. I've seen his hands in person. That guy is a freak, and he catches anything thrown to him, and he showed it there why they went to him in that spot, not Amari Cooper. So it was a big time play call. Jack Del Rio, everyone from the meme that took over the internet was the South Park episode of Jack Del Rio pushing the wheelbarrow of his cojones down the sidewalk. So it was a big thing for the Raiders for that to happen. It reminded me of, I can't remember who it was against, but it was 2003 when the Texans were right there, and Dom Capers and David Carr, Derek's brother, decided to go for it to win the game. But like 5 seconds left, you lose, you know, you take the field goal, you tie, you go for the touchdown, you win. They went for the touchdown, and David snuck it in, and they won. I think it was, I don't know if it was on that magnitude because it was like later on in the season, but like I said, this is a big move week one for the Raiders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And for a team, you know, Jack's also smart enough to know that this team needs all the wins they can get because it is a slightly difficult schedule. Everybody thought that the division was going to be a little bit on the downside, but now that Denver's showing that they're still right back pretty much where they were, it's a three-team race, even though the Chargers technically could, you know, make a run as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people believe it's a three-team race. I wouldn't count the Chargers out yet, but losing Keenan Allen is a huge loss for them. And blowing that lead against Kansas City in the second half, I mean, that's not good. Denver's going to be there. Denver's defense will carry them. Trevor Siemian looked really, really well. I mean, I know he had the two picks, but he looked pretty calm, cool, and collected in the pocket against Carolina last Thursday night to open the season. And, you know, Kansas City with that huge win against San Diego, they'll be around. A lot of people count on Alex Smith, you know, way too quickly out here. And I think people are starting to learn that Alex is actually a pretty decent quarterback. I know he didn't throw the ball down the field like people want, but you're right. It'll be a three-team race, but the Raiders will be right in it if they keep playing like they did last week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that, you know, given Alex Smith's game, a lot of people do down-talk him, but if you look here in the last 3, 4, 5 years, Tom Brady's longest pass in the air was about 30 or 40 yards. So, I mean, it's kind of where the league's going, these little short passes, the in and out, a lot of the bubble screens, that kind of thing. So, finally, Alex Smith's kind of getting his due, just unfortunately, while he's out of the Bay Area.
Yeah, like I was always an Alex Smith guy, especially when he got drafted by the Niners. And I was kind of upset. I wanted them to take Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, I saw what they were doing. Alex had that huge year at Utah. They beat the Pitt Panthers, my hometown team, in the Fiesta Bowl that year. Alex goes to the 49ers. He has like 9 offensive coordinators in 3 minutes in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So he really is in a bad spot there. Coach Harbaugh comes in. He turns things around. Greg Roman and Coach Harbaugh had the right offense for Alex. And then unfortunately the injury happens and he gets Wally Pitt for Colin Kaepernick. And we all know how that turned out. So I think Alex got a raw deal here. A lot of people here still like him. They have a lot of respect for him. I mean, not Raider fans probably don't because, obviously, why would they? He plays for the Chiefs. But the guy proved last year, and he proved it in week one that he's not a bad quarterback, and people need to start respecting that he can do more things, especially like he did against the Chargers last week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, since we're talking about the 49ers, obviously with all the Kaepernick stuff and that kind of thing, but I want to bring up something I heard Colin Cowherd say, I believe it was yesterday. He was trying to figure out, he's narrowed it down to four teams that about 2 years from now Tom Brady could end up on. And he had Houston, which I throw out. He had, I'm trying to think of the other two, but he also said the 49ers. So let's play fantasy camp for a second. Could you actually see Chip Kelly, if he's still there, or even Jed York pulling the strings on making Tom Brady a 49er?
So Colin's point is that the Patriots would Wally Pip Brady for Garoppolo, and then that, therefore they would trade him?
They would pull a Montana, pull a Favre. They would just say, you know what, instead of waiting to figure out when exactly the skills are going to diminish, why don't we – the Patriots are usually proactive, usually the year before you diminish, they find a new home for you. So, I mean, Garoppolo is probably the second-best quarterback Bill Belichick's had up there since Drew Bledsoe. So if they did make that move and re-sign Garoppolo, whose deal's up in 2 years, you know, maybe there's a chance they move on from Tom Brady.
I could maybe see the Niners looking at it, but Brady will be in his 40s. He's a very accurate passer, so that fits Chip's offense. But and he's from the Bay Area, he's from San Mateo, California, so that fits. I don't see the Niners maybe going after him as much as another team would. But if this was the other way around and it was Garoppolo, I see a lot of teams going after him because I think something we've learned with that after that Sunday night game is that a lot of people undervalue Bill Belichick as a coach. Because he's won the four Super Bowls. He's lost the two to the Giants. But what we've learned is, and the question people need to start out pondering, which it's not really entirely accurate, is Tom Brady really that good, or is he just a product of Belichick's system? Because Matt Cassidy did the same thing not that long ago, and he ended up going to get a big contract, had one good year as a Chief, and then his career fell off. So if Brady wasn't with Belichick, would he be who he is? I mean, he's a good quarterback. He's a great quarterback. But it's a question to ponder. Is he just a product, another quarterback product of Belichick's system?
It's very true, and I'm sure we could talk for an hour on that. But I actually want to get to the 49ers because – not only did they have a spectacular game late on Monday night that for some reason I've stayed up and watched the entirety of, even though I was DVRing it, but, I mean, Blaine Gabbert looks good, 22 for 35, a touchdown, 170 yards. Carlos Hyde was able to run the ball very well. Jeremy Curley looked like the Jeremy Curley of 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, was it just an incredible matchup? Was it the Rams are just that terrible? Or is San Francisco really a lot better than people think?
All right, well, let's start it this way. The 49ers played on Monday Night Football last year at home with Jim Tomsula as their head coach, and they end up going out and they end up beating the Vikings week one. And then the next week, they end up going to Pittsburgh, and they get handed to them against the Steelers and that prolific offense. So I think the Niners will be better under Chip Kelly's offense, but the LA Rams, I don't know what their deal is. They lose 28-0, now they want to give Fisher a 3-year contract. For what? I like Fisher. Fisher is a great coach in Tennessee, but he's done nothing. He's Mr. 500. He's Mr. 7-9. So,
right.
It was a great game. Blaine Gabbert did look decent. Carlos Hyde, the 49ers running game. I think Carlos Hyde could have a huge year if he can just stay healthy. The Niners offensive line is going to be very solid this year if they all stay healthy. The one thing to take away from this, and it's good to hear, is no one's talking about Colin Kaepernick's play on the field because obviously with the anthem controversy and everything with him kneeling and all that, it's good to actually talk about the game and not to worry about how Kaepernick did before the game. And the thing that everyone's forgetting in this whole game for Monday night was the most exciting play was a guy that didn't play for either team when the drunk 16-year-old fan ran on the field. And if you haven't heard it, please Google Kevin Harlan's call. Might be the greatest play call in the history of professional sports.
Oh, absolutely. Shout out to Kevin Harlan. That was – I've heard it 5 or 6 times now, and I can't help but laugh and respect him that much more. I was going to say the most offensive thing L.A. did was when the fan got on the field because he got 80, 85 yards before they finally tackled him.
Yeah, I'm surprised the Rams didn't go and pick him up. I mean, yeah, they have Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley is a really solid running back, but that fan could have probably ran a better offense and been more effective in the passing game than Case Keenum was, because I don't know how that guy's keeping his job. I mean, but the one thing to look at, and this is something we talked about in length, is how bad is Jared Goff if he couldn't even dress for the game and he's the number one overall pick, where Carson Wentz, the number two overall pick, is starting and won a game against Cleveland. But he won a game in his first NFL start on Sunday, where Jared Goff was inactive, backing up Case Keenum and Sean Mannion on Monday night in the Bay Area where he's from. So I think Goff will eventually be their starter, but I don't know how you can keep rolling out Case Keenum after a game he had, only completing less than 50% of his passes. So the LA Rams, that's what they're going to end up doing. It's going to be a really, really long year in their return to Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And from a question, now, Lo Neal threw this out earlier when you guys had Brad Evans on this morning. But are you really in a quarterback dilemma between Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins in fantasy?
Well, you know, I'm a big Captain Kirk fan. I love Kirk Cousins. I'm a big fan of him. The whole "you like that" spiel he did last year, that was great.
Oh, yeah.
The crying Jordan they got of him the other day against the Steelers. So I'm not going to lie, I laughed, even though I like Captain Kirk. I just think it's funny because those two teams are playing each other, and I couldn't decide who I wanted to start. When it comes to fantasy football, I undervalue quarterbacks because you can get so many points out of receivers and running backs,
right,
and tight ends, where I'm like, you know what, you can get a quarterback later in the draft. And the last couple of years, I've mixed and matched with a bunch of bums who are, up-and-comers in the draft, and, you know, later in the draft, and I've gone to the playoffs. But, you know, I lost last week. That wasn't Kirk Cousins' fault. I mean, him and Dak both had a bad game. But, yeah, that was my dilemma this morning. I didn't know who to start, but both those defenses aren't very good, so I expect both of them to score a lot of points. And, obviously, Brad Evans went with Kirk Cousins, which will be the favorite everyone will go with. But it was an interesting question to pose because Dak can actually, you know, Dak will rush for some yards, but if you compare the both their games from last week, I really don't know who had the better game. They're both pretty awful.
Yeah,
although,
if they'll open up the playbook for Dak a little bit, I feel like he'll be a lot better. But they're playing this very careful crawl before you can walk game in Dallas. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a coin flip because I like Kirk Cousins too. I watched him destroy my Wolverines for a couple years in the Big Ten. So, I mean, I like the guy.
Well, the best part about that whole thing with Dak was everyone's making those comments about how the sun was affecting the Cowboys players. And Jason Garrett put it the best. The sun has been here for 5 billion years. The sun will be here for 5 billion more years. So, I'm with you. I think they'll open up the playbook more for Dak. But it just shows you how valuable Tony Romo is to that organization and franchise when he actually can get on the field and actually play for them, because they are a very good team when Romo plays. It's just a matter of when he's actually on the field.
You know, to tie in that last Tom Brady thing we talked about, I think Dallas was the leading place that Colin said he could go, which would be incredible. It would make a lot of sense. But, you know, I know you still pull for your hometown Steelers a good bit too. Do you think they're still the front runners in the AFC, or are they still going to have to knock the Patriots off?
You know what? That's a great question, because I picked them. We did our pick of, you know, our predictions was last week, and I actually picked the Steelers to win the Super Bowl, because I think that offense is way too explosive with Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, who could be the first non-quarterback MVP in how long. That guy is just
right,
explosive. He's really good. They don't have Martavius Bryant for the first 10 games. Le'Veon Bell is out until week 4. Marcus Wheaton was hurt last week, but they have Sammy Coates and Eli Rogers. Darius Hayward-Bay, but I don't know if you want to get excited about him. That offense is explosive. They have a really good, young, talented defense who they showed last week against Washington. They can slow you down. Ryan Shazier is a great young linebacker. I like the way the Steelers are heading, and I think they can dethrone the Patriots, even with Garoppolo or Brady or whoever the first-team quarterback is playing for them at some point. I think it's going to be the Steelers or the Patriots in the AFC, as much as Raider fans and people in the Bay Area don't want to hear that. It's between those two, and ultimately I think the Steelers are going to get a Super Bowl, because that offense is just way too good to not have a chance to get a Super Bowl to give Ben another chance to win another ring.
Yeah, when we did our preseason Super Bowl picks, I was the only one who could come up with one. I said it was going to be New England over Seattle. Seattle's not helping me out currently. But, yeah, I think it's going to be an AFC year in the Super Bowl, and it's either going to be New England or it's going to be Pittsburgh. And given – I mean, you could say New England did it one the other day in Arizona with the backup quarterback. Both starting tackles were out, no Gronk. So, yeah, they are really good, but – if they get a score-for-score fest, Big Ben can put up 35, 40 points just with the weapons he has, where I think Brady's going to struggle.
No, I agree. And last year the Steelers showed it, where how this was kind of the Tony Romo dilemma, because with the Steelers, where Roethlisberger missed a couple games last year and Landry Jones and Michael Vick filled in. And Michael Vick was great. I mean, you guys know in Atlanta, Michael Vick was a really good quarterback back in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had Brian Finnern on today, and he pretty much said that Michael Vick made him into an all-decade Madden player because of how good he was.
Right.
So, but it's like I said, it's with Rodgers and Romo, and the comparison is Roethlisberger and Romo, my mistake, how valuable it is, because when those guys ran, Antonio Brown couldn't catch the ball. They weren't scoring any points. They just didn't look good. And then once Roethlisberger came back, there he is, boom, you know, they're scoring 35 points a game. I think the most undervalued thing in this whole, in the whole Steelers offense is Todd Haley. Todd Haley is, he's really turned around that Steelers offense with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so surprised that he has not gotten a head coaching offer. I know it didn't really work out in Kansas City with him after that first year they were good, but I think he deserves to get another job as head coach. So, yeah, I'll lean with Roethlisberger and a shootout with Tom Brady, although I'm a big fan of Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator slash rocket scientist of the New England Patriots. So, if Roethlisberger stays healthy, that's the key. I think that they're right there in the AFC title game against facing the Patriots.
Absolutely. And I believe you said you had a question for me. What was that question?
All right, so you guys are down in hard – this is interesting because Clay Travis, who's on Fox Sports Radio, he's on it before us in the morning because we're a Fox affiliate. He posed this question that some Alabama fan wrote about how she used to be in Alabama. Her and her girls would go out and party, and all this stuff 20 years ago for SEC games down in Bama. Now, you guys are down in SEC country with Georgia being there and Florida's not far and everything else. Are SEC women now dressing too scandalous for college football? That was the question he was posing, and I want to ask you guys because you're in the heart of SEC country.
That is a good question. I think without calling out the particular venues that it could happen, I think it would depend on the team or the school, but I think for the most part, It's kind of borderline. There's a lot of times when you walk past some tailgates. Obviously, Georgia State that we also cover here at Impact Media. Obviously, they're Sun Belt and they're not SEC. But there's been a couple opposing teams that when they come in, you're kind of like that's an interesting attire there. But you know, I would say for the most part, everybody's keeping it pretty clean, and most of the scandalously clad females are not really making it into the game. They're usually on the outside.
Yeah, her whole point was the women now are dressing like they're trying to be Victoria's Secret models, and it was a big deal on his show in the morning. I figured since I'm going to be on with you guys, I figured I'd ask because you're down there. A lot of people here would take offense because of being a Pac-12 country with Stanford and Cal, UCLA, and USC down south, and you have Arizona and Arizona State. I think they have an argument, but it was a good topic that he brought up, and I figured I'd ask you guys, because like I said, you're right there. So thank you for answering that, because that's been a burning question in the back of my head for someone down in SEC country to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I know you're right over there in the UCLA, USC area, and at least when they show things on College Game Day, everybody's, you know, pretty appropriately dressed and stuff like that. But, yeah, I do see that kind of as not an epidemic, but it could be a problem somewhere down the road that if colleges don't start cracking down on this, it could get pretty bad.
Yeah, and, you know, this you brought it up, actually, and you brought up Georgia State. And I want to send my condolences because I like the upside that that Will Lutz, the kicker from the Saints, has. I mean, that was a really tough situation to put him in to win the game from 61 yards. I think he has a bright future playing for the Saints. But since you guys, you know, you cover them, what was he like as a player at Georgia State?
Actually, one of my earliest memories, which was just really last year, was the first full year we covered him, even though we covered him a little bit before there. But my first time on the field covering them, I happened to be standing right next to the kicking net, wasn't thinking nothing about it, and he was warming up for punts and kicks during the game, as kickers do, because he did both duties. And I heard what sounded like a cannon go off beside me, and it was him kicking into the net, and I literally jumped, it felt like, from one sideline to the other. And he apologized why he was laughing, but no, that not only is he a super guy and a model citizen, but when you watch him warm up, especially when he played most of his home games in the Georgia Dome, if not all of them, he can kick the crap out of the ball in a dome. So when I saw the Saints pick him up, there's a chance next time if he goes for a 60-plus yarder, there's a chance he's going to be a lot closer on that. And I feel like them going early or them going with that younger guy like Will Lutz, without me being the homer, I feel like when they redo this team and blow it up kind of like they're doing and repackage everybody, he's going to be their guy for the future. And I wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm tired of seeing all these retread kickers going around like Kai Forbath and Connor Barth. It's good to see some young talent there. When it comes to Georgia State, I want to say good luck this weekend against Wisconsin. You're only a 35.5-point underdog. I can see maybe an upset happening now. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, we did GSU Panthers on, or at least I did, yesterday. And let's see, do I have my three? I had three. The three keys to how Georgia State can beat Wisconsin. And I said you got to plug up the run lanes because they got some fantastic runners and a great offensive line. You got to stretch the field because that's one of the few weaknesses Wisconsin has. I know a lot about them because I watch a lot of Big Ten stuff. And you got to win the trenches. But even Georgia State people won't hold it against me when I say I just don't want to get embarrassed. And I felt like the Air Force game last week was approaching that, but they just got to play better. They did really well against Oregon last year and didn't get embarrassed in front of them. But I mean, I guess on the bright side, the school's going to get a check for $1.2 million for showing up on Saturday. So, you know, at least we can build another you know, field house or weight room or whatever they plan on doing with that.
Yeah, and when it comes to Wisconsin, you know, I know how good of a coach Paul Chris could be. He's the coach of Pitt. So, you know, Bart Houston, he's a local kid. He's from out here. He's from out in the East Bay by Oakland. Mm-hmm. And then Corey Clement, the running back from Wisconsin, I really like his game. He had a good game against LSU. Then he went for over 100 last week against Akron. But Akron's an up-and-coming team in the MAC. They're an up-and-coming team in the MAC. But
yeah,
I think a big win is you know, don't lose by 35 points, and that's a win. I mean, I guess what you can do. I mean, Tom Swab, you said they're bringing in $1.2 million. I mean, you can't really turn that down. So,
no.
I mean, I'm going to see Cal, Texas on Saturday in Berkeley. There's going to be 1,000 points scored in that game, and Cal's probably going to lose by 100 because they'll score points, but they don't stop anyone. So that might be the most exciting game in college football this weekend just because it's a revenge game for what happened last year in Austin where Cal beat them on a missed extra point. But sorry, I wanted to bring college football into it because it's an exciting weekend because of you mentioned Georgia State and I saw they're playing Wisconsin. So just cover that spread and don't lose by 35. I think it's a win because once you're in the conference games, I think they'll win some games. So it's a good thing, but that all ties in with Will Lutz and I thought I liked his upside even though he was playing a tough spot last week.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, just if I was to put a bug in your ear that I mean, obviously you guys have already played him now, but if you wanted a pretty cool guest, he's very well spoken. He's a very educated. I mean, he's still technically a kid, but I mean, you know, if you guys want somebody cool to have on the morning show, I think you guys would enjoy having Will.
Yeah, no, I don't remember if the Niners play the Saints this year. I think they might. But that's something to look into because kickers. When I lived in Pittsburgh and I covered the Steelers for a while for when I did TV there, the thing I always wanted to do is I wanted to go up to the kicker, which was Sean Sweezum, and I always said, I walked up to him and I said, you know what, man, I'm going to interview you because you get a bad, the kickers get a bad rap. No one ever wants to talk to you guys. So I just always talked to him, and the punter at the time was, I can't remember what. I just talked to the punter and the kicker every day when I was there just so they didn't feel left out because everyone always forgets the little people, the kickers and the punters.
Exactly. And actually, New Orleans will be in San Francisco on November 6th. That's a 4:05 Eastern, 1:05 your time kickoff.
Well, that should be a good game. There probably will be 1,000 points scored in that game because the Saints don't stop anyone, and the 49ers will score points, and the Saints will score points on the 49ers defense because Drew Brees is – I'm gonna throw this out there, and you guys can disagree. I think Drew Brees is a little bit better than Case Keenum.
It might be really close, and you know, for the sake of not getting struck by lightning for lying there, I would hope he's a little bit better than Case Keenum. If he's not, I feel like Drew Brees would go home and teach his kids how to use Tide and wash clothes.
It's a good point. But real quick, with the game this weekend for the Falcons and Raiders, here's the thing for the Falcons, for them to win. If Sean Smith and David Amerson and DJ Hayden and the rest of the Raiders corners cannot slow down Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and everyone else, I think it's going to be the Falcons will win that game because Sean Smith got benched last week because he couldn't cover Brandon Cooks or Thomas, the rookie from Ohio State, or anyone. He got benched with DJ Hayden, who everyone here hates, and all Raider Nation hates DJ Hayden. They call him Toast Hayden because the guy can't cover anyone, and he might be the worst first-round draft pick since Jamarcus Russell or Robert Gallery out here. So
Joey Bosa.
Julio Jones, that guy can't get him on the field. At least Gallery and Jamarcus got on the field. I think if Julio and Mohamed Sanu have a big game, I think the Raiders in trouble if Sean Smith gets benched again. He came out and admitted, he deserved to get benched. I mean, he did. He was that crap. But if those two guys, Julio and Mohamed Sanu, who I'm a big fan of watching him play for the Bengals, if they can't cover those guys, I think the Falcons can win because Matt Ryan is a very – I still think he's underrated. He gets a bad rap because of the way the teams play, but I think Matt Ryan's a solid quarterback, even now that he is in his early 30s. I still think that – Ryan could be an elite quarterback. It's just he needs the right people around him, and I think he has receivers with Sanu and Julio, even if Julio is banged up a little bit. So, like I said, those corners can't cover him, and if Tevin Coleman has another almost 100-yard receiving game because Malcolm Smith and Raiders middle linebacker can't cover anybody, I think the Falcons win that game. So that's the key for the Raiders is to slow down that passing offense and limit Matt Ryan from having 300 yards passing against them. Just, Drew Brees carved him up. I mean, he's 400 yards. So the Raiders' secondary and coverage and with their linebackers is their biggest flaw right now besides their offensive line getting hurt, which their offensive line was supposed to be one of their strong points. So it'll be an interesting game. I'm excited to watch it.
Absolutely. And I know you got to go. You got some other stuff you got to do for the station over there. Appreciate you coming on, Cody. It's always great talking to you, whether it's on or off here. And I'll leave you with this little nugget if you want to bring it up and let the guys ponder over it, whether it makes the show or not. If the Falcons season starts to tank, do you think Chip Kelly could make a move for Matt Ryan? We'll just leave that where it is, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, because I really feel like if they do start to tank that Arthur Blank does not want to give Matt Ryan – another $20 million next year?
That's a good question to ponder. And also, real quick, Dan Quinn was on a list of odds released today of coaches that could be likely who will be fired first. So it was Fisher. It was Jeff Fisher. I forget who the second was. I think Rex Ryan. And then it was Dan Quinn. And then it was Gus Bradley. So I think the leash needs to be a little longer on Dan Quinn because it's only his second year. So we'll see. But, the Matt Ryan coach, that's a good one. I'll bring that up tomorrow.
I mean, personally, a coach that usually is here on the show said that he could see him as a backup for Jameis Winston. I said I think the Cardinals are going to make a play for him because Carson Palmer will be done this year. But It occurred to me that if he was on the 49ers, you know, they may do quite well.
I mean, Matt Ryan, he's a very effective passer, and that's what Chip needs. And he's a guy that will complete passes because Gabbert was missing guys in bubble screens. You know, don't let his numbers fool you. He looked okay. He didn't look that good. But, you know, it was his first week in the offense. We'll see how it goes. But I could definitely see Matt Ryan coming here if the price is right.
Absolutely. Like I said, if you want to, just throw it out to them. If they want to use that, then Chad, Joe, and Lowe, you are welcome. And if they don't want to use it, you can throw me under the bus so they don't throw you any further under the bus. Cody, it is always great having you on, like I said. And we will see you on later down the road.
All right, man. Thanks again. And feel free to reach out. I think the Niners for the Falcons this year, so feel free to reach out then when those prolific offenses play later on in the season.
Oh, absolutely. Any chance we can get you back on, we definitely will.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
And that was Cody Elias from 95.7 The Game. He's the producer of the morning show, Chad, Joe, and Lowe. Always great to talk to. We talk about all kinds of stuff. I mean, just anything. Always got a great opinion, and I believe he's right. I believe the 49ers game is actually over here in Atlanta. That is, right before Christmas, the week before Christmas, the 18th. But, like I said, we talked about some good stuff there. I do think this game, we'll get into some Falcons stuff here in a second. I want to get through the rest of the NFL stuff, and then we'll get on to that. But, there's some pretty incredible things going on. And like I said, he's just fantastic to have on. So we'll definitely have him back on in the next coming weeks, even if we're not playing a Bay Area team, because he's always got something to add. He's always great. That's what I try to do. I try to have people that either know more about it than me or have a different take or are just good people, because it makes it entertaining. If it's entertaining, then you guys will want to listen to it. You'll tell your friends about it. And we definitely appreciate it. You know, I really want to save the Cam Newton headshots and concussion protocol stuff till we have Coach and Reggie on, so we may save that for next week. But my quick thing on it is at least a couple of those should have been called at some point. They did finally find some of these guys, but, I mean, it's kind of after the fact. It's kind of like you've already done the damage, and then you want to, after the fact, go back and do it. Like giving somebody a speeding ticket 6 months after they wrecked their car. It's just, you know. And it's not even that much. It's all like $20,000 or less for guys that are making $16, $17 million this year. So they do need to fix the concussion protocol. I know the NFL has pledged $1 million, $1 billion. It really does. It's all just transaction numbers to them. But to try to help with the concussions and concussion protocol, you know, is what it is there. Another thing I want to talk about, Bills offense outside linebacker Jerry Hughes had to take Uber to the game. Why did he have to take Uber? Well, it's because he missed the team bus and they left without him. It's not real good for not only him or the organization, but this just tells you Rex Ryan is slowly losing control of the circus. And if he does come available, yeah, he'll get a head coaching job or a coordinator job somewhere. Rex Ryan's a good guy and a good coach, but right now I think he's having a lot of issues. We're gonna have to see, you know, here in the next, you know, handful of minutes as Thursday night kickoff is on right now. We'll have more on a little bit later. But I mean, come on, Hughes. Come on, Jerry Hughes. You have to make the team bus. I'm sure you had a great excuse, like miss the alarm clocks. If I was a NFL player, even on the road, I would have 6 alarm clocks and 2 phones, and a roommate that would hopefully do the same thing. You're in the big time. You can't have these mistakes. I wanted to get into some big surprises as far as what happened in week one, but of course the big surprise that it's not really a big surprise. RG3 hurt his shoulder. He's now on the IR. Josh McCown will be in. A lot of people think the Browns are actually going to be better. I'm one of those. I wanted RG3 to have a resurgence, but, I mean, if he's out for the year, I just don't know that there's a place for him in the league after this year. So, you know, wish the best to him on his speedy recovery. But now to some of the big surprises. Big surprises from week one. The fact that the Broncos and Trevor Siemian might be the best quarterback they've had in a couple of years. And that's not personal Peyton, but he knew his arm was falling off. Brock Osweiler was okay. He was kind of a game manager. Seems like Trevor Siemian. This is only after 1 week. But I like Trevor Siemian. I like what he did. They made sure to set him up for success and not failure. Good for them. It wasn't surprising to me, but it was surprising to a couple people that the Jacksonville Jaguars almost beat the Green Bay Packers. The Packers still have issues, but they have Aaron Rodgers. So they won that game 27-23. The Chargers blew a big lead. That didn't surprise me, but it did surprise me that it was against the Chiefs, who came back and scored just a crap ton of points, 133-27. Jack Del Rio going for two and beating the Saints in New Orleans, 35-34. That was fantastic and surprising. The Eagles putting up 29 on the Browns. I thought for sure the Browns were a little better than the Eagles. You could say, well, RG3 got hurt, but that's probably why they scored 10 points, was because he was out. The Seattle Seahawks narrowly winning 12-10 against the Dolphins. The Dolphins' defense is actually pretty good. Seattle's defense is pretty good, but their offense, I don't know what to say about it. It just they didn't look that good at all up until Doug Baldwin in the very end. Also got to say, what's surprising is Russell Wilson hurt his ankle. That's not the surprising part. The surprising part is that Ndamukong Suh accidentally, and this was an actual accidental, he accidentally stepped on his ankle. This is one of the few times that Ndamukong Suh hurt somebody on the field and didn't do it on purpose. Another thing surprising, Dak Prescott was able to hold his own. If they would open up the playbook like we said, like me and Cody said just a few minutes ago, then I think the Cowboys would do a lot better. The surprising thing of that game is Dez Bryant had one catch for like 8 yards. It didn't matter if it was for 100 yards. It's you got to find Dez, and somebody has to tell Terrence Williams to get out of bounds. That's the whole reason. I mean, they lost that game for a couple of reasons, but the main reason, they had a chance to win, but Terrence Williams decided, I don't know what he decided, but he's got to know to get out of bounds. The Lions over the Colts, as Matthew Stafford looks like he did at Georgia. He had some good weapons going. Maybe the Lions aren't that bad, or maybe it's just 1 week and the Colts are that bad. It's really Andrew Luck and the nobody and 52 nobodies are just mediocre players for the most part. They need an offensive line badly, which baffles me because they let go of Georgia State offensive lineman, former Georgia State offensive lineman, Ulrich John, who is now with the Miami Dolphins and doing quite well. So I think the Colts are slowly getting in that phase where their owner is not making the right decisions and they're on a downhill slide. I hope Andrew Luck gets help before he gets, you know, ruptures another internal organ. Other things that were surprising. In our picks last week, Coach went 1-3. Reggie went 1-3. They also had the same picks, so, I mean, that kind of makes sense. What did we all pick? It's somewhere on here. We all picked the Giants over the Cowboys. And that means I went 3-1 because I went against them in two other ones. So thank you guys so much. Our picks for this week. Oh, the other surprise, of course, the 49ers playing out of their minds. But then again, I think Jeff Fisher's time in L.A. should be done. I think Les Snead should be sent packing with him. Their defense doesn't need that much help, so maybe that's where Todd Haley goes. He leaves Pittsburgh for L.A. Not a bad idea, huh? Write that down, because if that happens, I want to be the one to say I told you so. This week's games, I'm going to get the picks from Coach and Reggie. None of these are for tonight, so we don't have to worry about it up until then. We've got Atlanta at Oakland. I've got the Oakland Raiders in this one. I feel like if it does become a score fest, that Oakland's got slightly more going for them, and I do think at some point their defense will make a stop. And also they actually have a pass rush, which is something Atlanta hasn't had since, I don't know, Mayor Shirley Franklin. Look it up. Kansas City at Houston. Houston kind of surprised me last week, but I still got Kansas City as the strongest team in their division. And I think Kansas City is going to beat Houston. It could be 30-29. It could be 13-6. But I do think Kansas City is going to be a force to be reckoned with. They did win 10 straight games to finish last season going into the playoffs. So far, I got Oakland over Atlanta. I got Kansas City over Houston. I got Cincinnati Bengals going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I like Cincinnati a little bit, but Pittsburgh is my pick. I just think that no matter if it's a score fest or not, Big Ben shows that he can hang 35, 40 points on anybody. Antonio Brown was fantastic. D'Angelo Williams ran like he was 22. I'm not bringing up your age, D'Angelo. I'm a huge fan of yours. I felt like you got a raw deal out of Carolina. I'm glad you're getting to be featured there. And, hey, here's to your success. Last game we got is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are going to be traveling to the Arizona Cardinals. Both these teams really impressed me last week. I feel like Jameis is going to pull this one off somehow. Tampa Bay is going to go over Arizona. So to recap, I've got the Oakland Raiders over the Atlanta Falcons. I've got Kansas City over Houston. I've got Pittsburgh over Cincinnati. And I've got Tampa Bay over Arizona. Now, the question I ask Cody, I will answer real quickly. Is Big Ben and the Steelers still the front runners in the AFC? I think until Brady gets back, they are. We got to see where Brady's at. If it takes a couple games to get loose, sure. If they end up going with Garoppolo over Brady, which I highly doubt, but if they do, sure. I still give the nod to the Steelers as far as that. But if they play straight up, I would be interested to see what Big Ben can do against the New England defense, which is very fast, very chaotic, and very unorthodox. Now, let's talk about some Atlanta stuff here for the next handful of minutes. When we talk about the loss to Tampa Bay, it pretty much become the score fest we thought it would be. And actually, for the most part, it looked like, you know, what went right, it looked like that these were not the plays. That was my actual thing I wrote down as the producer is looking at my notepad right now. The actual reason that I thought the offense did better was because they didn't seem to be using the same plays this season as they did last season. I don't know if finally we've opened up, we're outside the vanilla basic that was last year of the Kyle Shanahan offense, but they were running completely different plays, or at least they were more effective in running them, which could be the thing as well. But I think they're finally opening up the Shanahan offense, and I think it actually works. They're very aggressive. Mohamed Sanu fits so well in this, which he's been in it before, but he is going to be the pickup that people are going to be talking about. And, you know, if they can hang in some of these games, they're only down by 7 at the end of this. 31-24, Jameis looked really good. Roberto Aguayo was very good. And the thing I also liked with the Falcons, they had good tackles early. They were doing well. They were wrapping at the waist and the feet and clean hits. Nobody was going for the head. Nobody was going for the strip sack or anything like that, because those have never worked in Atlanta. Although the defense was susceptible to the short, flat, and middle. It was these little short dunk and dink passes that just continue to give them all kinds of fits. Now, in the debate, Tevin Coleman versus Devontae Freeman. Freeman's still the starter, in my opinion. Tevin Coleman had a lot of those yards coming out of the backfield. I think he did well. I think you run them kind of like a committee, maybe a 60-40, 70-30 with Freeman getting most of them until proven otherwise. If Coleman has two or three straight games where he's out gaining Freeman, then swap him unless somehow those yards go away, and then you make sure that he's better off the bench. A lot of people in the NBA even are very good off the bench. As far as Oakland and Atlanta, I already told you who I thought was going to win with the Oakland Raiders picking up the victory there. I actually think they're going to win by 9 points. We'll go 10. They're going to win by 10. You know, you got the reuniting of the Alabama wide receivers, Julio Jones and Amari Cooper. When Amari Cooper was taking a lot of his visits, he met Julio Jones, who I believe was in his last year at Alabama. There's 4 or 5 years difference in them, but they've stayed friends. They've worked out together, and it'll be cool to see Alabama have two of their best players in their last handful of years get featured like this with good quarterbacks who can get them the ball. Now, the biggest question to me, for the Atlanta Falcons is, can the secondary slow down Derek Carr and Amari Cooper's air attack? I could easily say that could they stop them? But I don't think you're going to stop them. Can you slow them down? Can you contain them enough to give your team a chance? Because that's what it's going to come down to. Both sets of offenses, both Oakland and Atlanta, have the biggest chance in the world of scoring points. They can score 20 to 25 points on a good day, on a bad day, you know, possibly more than that, depending on if they get things rolling. Based off last week, I think both teams could score 25 to 30 points. But it's going to come down to which secondary can make stops. If it's Oakland, then they're going to win. If they can get a pass rush, that's going to help them. But Atlanta without the pass rush and with not a whole lot of aggressiveness in the middle of the field with the linebackers, I feel like if Atlanta cannot get any great production or slow down the air attack, then Atlanta's not going to pick up the victory. But, you know, maybe we'll live tweet. Maybe we'll I at least keep in touch with Cody during this game. He might be at the game, so it might be a little hard. But I'll live tweet during this game and get my thoughts as to things going on. But that's going to do it for us this week. Appreciate my guest, Cody Elias of 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area. He is, like I said, the producer of the morning show, Chad, Joe, and Lowe. Spectacular show. I listen to it as much as I can. They have some great guests. I only had Drew Faber the other day for UFC guys. Just all kinds of fun things and everything. Make sure to tune in to them. You catch them online. You can get the podcast for them and all that. But I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us on Falcon Zone this week. Hopefully Coach and Reggie will join us next week. We'll talk about some more fun things. We'll talk about Cam Newton, and we'll talk about the Falcons keeping Matt Ryan for once. What a change, right? We'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?